Thank you all very much for coming. How nice to be with you all. And I hope you're all happy in Krishna consciousness. Very nice. So we will read this evening a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 19, Text 15. This is spoken by Maharaj Parikshit. Just at the beginning of the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam to him by Shukadev Goswami. Tamopayatam pratiyantu vipra Ganga chadevi dritachittamishe Dvijo paslishta kurkas takshakova Dashatvalam gayata Vishnu gata. O Brahmins, just accept me as a completely surrendered soul, and let Mother Ganges, the representative of the Lord, also accept me in that way, for I've already taken the lotus feet of the Lord into my heart. Let the snake bird, or whatever magical thing the Brahmin created, bite me at once. I only desire that you all continue singing the deed of Lord Vishnu. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As soon as one is given up completely under the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, he is not at all afraid of death. The atmosphere created by the presence of great devotees of the Lord on the bank of the Ganges and Maharaj Parikshit's complete acceptance of the Lord's lotus feet were sufficient guarantee to the king for going back to Godhead. He thus became absolutely free from all fear of death. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschitya Dejitarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasudhi Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now we are actually going to read a little bit more, but from Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The ocean of the nectar of devotion. This verse we just read is quoted in a particular place in Nectar of Devotion, the place that we will read a little more from. And this verse is given as an example, or perhaps the classic example of the expression of a devotee who is very advanced in Krishna consciousness, very, very pure at heart, and therefore is exhibiting in very natural ways very wonderful personal qualities and characteristics. And this particular verse is quoted as an expression of such an advanced devotee who is extremely tolerant. There are 9, actually, symptoms given in Nectar of Devotion. They're given as symptoms of great advancement. So this one, of course, tolerance, even in the face of tremendous adversity, even in the face of death, such tolerance, the ability to meet such situations fearlessly and just in a completely dispassionate way. So it is one of the symptoms of great, great advancement. So let us just read. It's just a few sentences, actually, from Nectar of Devotion, in which these all 9 symptoms are described. Let's see. Yes, so we will read from the 18th chapter of Nectar of Devotion. Character of one in ecstatic love means very advanced Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada says, Rupa Goswami describes the characteristics of a person who has actually developed his ecstatic love for Krishna. In other words, who's become very advanced. The characteristics are as follows. 1. He's always anxious to utilize his time in the devotional service of the Lord. He does not like to be idle. He wants service always, 24 hours a day, without deviation. 2. He is always reserved and perseverant. This is tolerant. 3. He's always detached from all material attraction. 4. He does not long for any material respect in return for his activities. 5. He is always certain that Krishna will bestow his mercy upon him. 6. He's always very eager to serve the Lord faithfully. 7. He is very much attached to the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. 8. He is always eager to describe the transcendental qualities of the Lord. And 9. He is very pleased to live in a place where the Lord's pastimes are performed. For example, Mathura, Vrindavan, or Dwarka, or ISKCON Nation. Or ISKCON Pradorian. Yes. Yes, sir. So let us just consider these different characteristics of one in ecstatic love. Ecstatic love is the term Srila Prabhupada uses to paraphrase the Sanskrit term bhava. Bhava means ecstasy. So one in bhava, one in ecstatic love. Srila Prabhupada has chosen to express it like that. First of all, let us note that bhava is part of perfection in Krishna consciousness. In the development of Krishna consciousness, there are a number of fairly clear-cut stages that are described also by Rupa Goswami in the same book, Nectar of Devotion. Adau, Shraddha, Tata, Sadhu, Sangata, Vajana, Kriya, Tato, Narata, Nivritisya, Tato, Nishta, Ruchis, Tata, Atasaktis, Tato, Bhavas, Tata, Prema, Vyudanshati, Sadhakamam, Ayam, Premna, Prado, Bhave, Bhavet, Krama. Krama means step, step by step. So these are nine stages, step by step, in a person's development of Krishna consciousness. Bhava is the eighth step. And last step is prema, pure love for Krishna. And the tenth step, do you know what the tenth step is? Well, there is not really a tenth step. They're just differing degrees or variations of the ninth step. Different forms of love for Krishna. Different degrees like that. So bhava is number eight. And it is part of the stage of perfection, along, of course, with prema, pure love for Krishna. The other seven stages are all part of the practice of devotional service. Practice in the sense of working on it, trying to become better at it, practicing. Yeah, the Sanskrit term is sadhana. Sadhana. Cultivation. Trying to develop your Krishna consciousness. And trying to bring it to the point of perfection, which then is bhava and prema. So the first seven stages then, they're all part of the process of practicing, developing, cultivating, and just trying to come to the perfect point. First of all, some faith, some little interest. What is this? What are these people doing? What is this chanting? And then feeling some interest like that, one comes to the next stage of sadhu sangha, or associating with devotees. And then in the association of devotees, one sees how wonderful Krishna consciousness is. One witnesses Krishna consciousness in action. And one witnesses, at least to some degree, the proof that Krishna consciousness is very joyful and wonderful, because one sees that the devotees, at least those who are trying to take it seriously, that they're very joyful and they're very wonderful actually as persons. So then on that second stage, Sadhu Sangha, the devotee becomes inspired like this. I want to become like that. I want to experience that for myself. And on that basis, inspired like that, the devotee takes up practical Krishna consciousness, really trying to practice the process. So that's bhajana kriya, which literally means devotional activities. So when the devotee is now practicing and trying to cultivate Krishna consciousness, the devotee has a very interesting, and perhaps at least for him or her, unexpected experience. That here I am practicing Krishna consciousness and cultivating and working on it and trying to progress in it. But as I am doing that, I see within myself a number of shortcomings. Actually, I didn't even know they were there. In fact, I thought they were not there. But now I see they are there. What is going on? So then one has to work to try to free oneself from those shortcomings. That's called anatta nivritti. Nullifying the unwanted things. Then when one has done that and the unwanted things are to a large degree done away with, one comes to the next level, fifth level, which is called nishta or steadiness, being fixed in Krishna consciousness. Because those other things, the distractions, the anathas, have been done away with. So one then, fixed in devotional service, comes to the next stage, seventh stage, ruchi, being so absorbed in devotional service, one naturally experiences a beautiful taste of pleasure and happiness in devotional service, because your mind and your senses, because you're fixed steadily, your mind and senses are now connected up with Krishna very nicely. Thinking of Krishna with the mind, chanting Hare Krishna with the tongue, and doing different practical services to Krishna with the body and its limbs and like that. And of course, not to forget, also with the tongue, what? Tasting prasada. Don't forget that. Of course, we know there's no chance you will look at it. But it's very important devotional activity. So like this, once Krishna is present in all those activities, he's present in his names, he's present in prasadam. And devotees like to taste prasadam because they're tasting Krishna. So like this, ruchi is the sixth stage, wonderful taste of great, great pleasure in the activities of devotional service. And then seventh stage is asakti. On the basis of that wonderful experience, one becomes deeply attached to Krishna and starts to realize one's eternal relationship with Krishna. It becomes revealed on that level, which is the last stage of practice. And finally, one crosses over from the stages of practice to perfection, first of all, bhava, as Prabhupada translates here, ecstatic love for Krishna. And then finally, the ninth stage, Krishna prema, pure love for Krishna. So we're talking here of bhava, that stage of ecstatic love and experiencing great ecstasy in devotional service. And when it comes to bhava, such an advanced stage, and it makes such an amazing impact on the devotee when they come to that point. So actually we read 9 symptoms, but there are many more. There are at least 50, and actually there's more even symptoms, and some or most are, you could say, because the whole experience is joyful and just overwhelmingly, overpoweringly blissful and happy. So many of those symptoms are symptoms, they're like, you could say, emotional symptoms. Because happiness, joy, bliss, we're talking about our emotions. Yeah, so some of them are just very, very emotional. I mentioned there's perhaps 50, maybe there's 60, maybe there's 70, we have to look and see. But 8 of them are, in one sense, particularly prominent, and they are very emotional. And we read, for example, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, how Lord Chaitanya would sometimes, or not just sometimes, but would manifest those emotional symptoms. Standing of hair on end. Sometimes fainting on the ground. Sometimes crying so many tears of ecstasy. Not some broken heartedness or some distress because something went wrong, but we're talking here of tears of ecstasy in Krishna consciousness. And even with Lord Chaitanya, sometimes his bodily color would change. His body was generally a very effulgent molten gold color. But when he would become really particularly involved with these ecstasies, then his body would change color. Sometimes it become white, sometimes pink. Oh, it's all. We're talking about high level things. So there are 8 of those, you could say, particularly prominent ecstatic symptoms. They're called the Ashta, means 8, Ashta Sattvika Bhavas. So then there's all the others, however many, a substantial number. Now, we just read these 9, and many of them, even perhaps all of them, many of them don't really seem to be very emotional at all. Not wasting your time doesn't seem so emotional. Some may be a little emotional, but perhaps not really that much. Always eager to chant the names of the Lord. Well, there's an element of emotion in that, you could say. Very happy to reside in a place of the Lord's pastimes. There's an element of emotion in that, but not just in, you could say, in a very natural way, in a very obvious way, emotional types of symptoms or characteristics in a person. But the interesting point is that this chapter, titled Characteristics of One in Ecstatic Love, is really focusing on what are the main characteristics of a person on that level, where otherwise one would expect to see, at least very often, if not practically all the time, one would expect to see great emotional displays. When Lord Chaitanya would dance in the Rath Yatra festival in Jagannath Puri, then he would become so overwhelmed by these different ecstatic symptoms that he would cry tears, but not just tears as we may do sometimes or have done when we were children or whatever. Big boys don't cry. So, Lord Chaitanya would cry, and actually, tears would not exactly come from his eyes, but it was more like, well, it's described in fact in Chaitanya Charitamrita as water being squirted from a syringe. And not just some little syringe, but more perhaps like a hose. Because Lord Chaitanya would be dancing in one place, and devotees and many people would surround him to see, because it was just such an otherworldly type of demonstration by Lord Chaitanya. So all the people surrounding Lord Chaitanya, and you know, they weren't like right next to him, but they were some few meters away because he was dancing around here and there. His tears would be squirting out so profusely that all those people watching, their clothes, they would become completely saturated. And sometimes when Lord Chaitanya would dance, then he would dance by near a ditch, not far from the entrance to the Jagannath temple. And you know, it's perhaps half a meter or a meter deep or something, and so many meters long. But that ditch would fill up with water from the tears of Lord Chaitanya. What do you think of that? Whew. That's quite something. You know, the other day, I was with some devotee somewhere in Russia, I think. And we were talking about something extraordinary. And he said, "Shoo," just like they say in South Africa. It's okay. Nothing wrong with it. So what an incredible thing. What a totally out of this world type of thing. And Lord Chaitanya, sometimes his limbs would stretch, the joints would somehow separate and then come back. And sometimes the limbs would retract into his torso, into his body. So, okay. So these are symptoms of Baba, symptoms of ecstasy, and ultimately anyone who comes to that level will experience these sometimes and then more and more. But now, in this particular chapter here, it is called characteristics of one in ecstatic love. Here, none of those, you could say, really emotional, symptoms are even mentioned. But rather, we get these other nine, which, you know, they're really quite different, pretty much. As I said, some of them have some elements of emotion in them, but otherwise they are, you know, you might say, a lot more down to earth than some of these other, like, super emotional ecstasies. Well, first one Srila Prabhupada mentions is, and it sounds very down to earth, always anxious to utilize his time in the devotional service of the Lord. He doesn't like to be idle. He wants service always, 24 hours a day, without deviation. So, actually we saw this in Srila Prabhupada himself. He once met with George Harrison, and I was not, I don't think, exactly in the room at the time, but we all heard afterwards, because when Prabhupada was on the planet, there was an extremely powerful grapevine. Now we have this internet, which is it's really taking the grapevine to another level. But anyway, we had a grapevine, and a lot of what was circulating on the grapevine was, what did Prabhupada just say? What did Prabhupada just do? And, you know, all the communications had to be done just by regular letter, email. So, it was not a very efficient system of distribution of information. But still, this is what would happen. Letters would go out every so many days. Prabhupada said this. Prabhupada did that. So at least on this occasion, Srila Prabhupada met with George Harrison in Bhaktivedanta Manor, and somehow the subject of sleep came up. And George Harrison was actually saying that, I don't like to sleep too much because, you know, there's so many things you could do, but if you're sleeping, you're just sort of totally dysfunctional, really. And you could be doing something useful. So he was explaining his feelings to Srila Prabhupada along those lines. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, whenever I take rest, then I think, here I am wasting my time again. Prabhupada was not thinking that, here I am, I'm going to really enjoy now sleeping, enjoy my tamagun. But many people think like that. Many people look forward to sleeping, and when they finally get to lie down to sleep, they find it quite exciting. So it means they're attracted to the mode of ignorance. So Srila Prabhupada said like that. And Srila Prabhupada's schedule, his daily program, was really quite extraordinary. He would take rest usually quite late, like 11. And then he'd be up by maybe 2. And not just, you know, every now and then, but every day. Every day. And then he would, usually early in the morning, he'd translate. And then after sort of Mangala Arati time, then he would chant, japa. And then he'd get into, he was managing the whole movement and meeting with people, very busy. Then in the afternoon, after lunch, maybe 2-ish or something, he would often or generally lie down, maybe for an hour, something like this. So in other words, he was only sleeping generally maximum 4 hours out of 24. Because he was just so inspired and enthusiastic to see that Krishna consciousness was spread. And he was experiencing so much ecstasy, incredible ecstasy, that in itself was a great stimulus. Let's give this to others. Let's get into this more ourselves so we experience more. But it's so wonderful, let's give it to others. It wasn't just that he was, you know, like just some sort of tough person who just somehow or other forces himself not to sleep. But he actually was so just enthused about Krishna consciousness. His own experience was just so amazing. And he was so driven in this way to want to distribute it to others. You know, you do get some people who, some people, they sleep for hours and hours. 10, 11, 12 hours. You get people like that. And it's really, it's just sad. You know, if the most exciting thing in your life is to sleep, in other words, be unconscious, that means you've got very little exciting in your life. If that's so important to you. Yes. So then the second one was reserved and perseverant. Reserved and perseverant basically means tolerant. And the verse which is given in the original text as like the classic expression of someone who is in that condition, reserved, perseverant, very tolerant, and just unaffected, and able to just continue on no matter what, was the verse, was this verse we read, spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, by Maharaj Parikshit. Because Maharaj Parikshit, he was cursed to die by the bite of a snake bird. Did you ever see a snake bird? A flying green mamba. Well, I don't know about now, but In those days, there were sometimes flying snakes. Snake birds. So he was cursed like that. Of course, it's a long story, but that's what happened. And he found out, in fact, he was cursed by a young boy who was not well educated or well trained and didn't really understand right from wrong so clearly. And certainly his real values in life were not properly established. But he cursed Maharaj Pariksit to die in 7 days by the bite of a snake bird. And that young boy's father found out about this. And he went to Maharaj Pariksit because he was the king. And he told him, this is the situation. My son has cursed you. And he offered that, if you like, I will remove the curse. So you won't die in 7 days. You'll carry on. But Maharaj Pariksit, he was both so tolerant, reserved, and perseverant, and so much having faith in Krishna, that instead of, I mean, think what you would do yourself, instead of jumping at the opportunity, okay, right, go for it, he said, no. Please don't reverse the curse. Don't remove it. I will accept the curse. Why? Why did it? It's not that he had some sort of, like he was suicidal or, you know, just one of these people who somehow enjoys suffering. But rather, he understood it's the will of the Lord. When something very extraordinary like that happens in the life of a devotee, any devotee actually, not just the very great exalted devotees like Maharaj Pariksit, but any devotee, if you are trying your best in Krishna consciousness, and you're not just sort of lazing around and all of that, waiting for prasadam time. So if you're really enthusiastic and you're really trying your best, then you can take it that when things apparently just happen, apparently out of the blue unexpectedly, things just happen in your life, you can take it, this is Krishna's arrangement for my development in Krishna consciousness. So Maharaj Pariksit, he was so much in that type of consciousness that even though he could have had this curse taken away, but he decided, no, I'll accept it. I'll be bitten by a snake bird and I'll be killed in that way. He accepted that. So that is very, very great tolerance, perseverance, and very great faith in Krishna. So he's a very good example of tolerance, perseverance in the face of adversity. And why? How could he be like that? Because he's on the level of Bhava. Because he is experiencing that Krishna consciousness is not just real. He's also experiencing that it's real. But he's also experiencing that it is just most incredibly blissful, joyful. Most incredibly. And therefore, the more such a person feels, the more I can be Krishna conscious, the better. And you know the famous prayer of Queen Kunti? Vipada santu ta shashvat tatra tatra jagad guru bhavato darshanam yat syat apuna bhava darshanam. They had suffered before she spoke that verse. They had suffered very tragically for years. But now when she spoke that verse, what had happened was that all the negativity had been removed from her life and the lives of her sons. And now they were to take charge of the whole planet and have all the resources of the planet at their disposal. Yes. So this was their situation. However, Queen Kunti spoke that prayer we just quoted the Sanskrit of, and it means, I wish that all those calamities would come again and again. Because then we will see your lotus feet again. And when we see your lotus feet, we no longer have to see repeated birth and death. So she had experience when they were in exile and they were really struggling for so many years. She had experience that when they absorbed themselves in Krishna consciousness, even though they're just living under the trees, choose your tree to sleep under. So, even though they're just living under the trees and life was really difficult and they're being persecuted often, but because they're in that really sort of hectic, very intense type of situation, then they felt they had no choice but to pray to Krishna and take shelter of him. And when they did it, when they did that, then all those very difficult situations would suddenly just be turned around and everything would be okay. And so now she had had so much experience of that. How those difficulties forced them to remember Krishna. And when they remembered, Krishna was so wonderful. So in other words, the end result was, it was so wonderful. So she's thinking that now we have this kingdom. It'll be so easy to become complacent, lethargic, and rest on our laurels, as they say. That, you know, we're now the big guys. So let's just relax and make the most of it. Just capitalize on our good fortune by getting all facilities for comfortable living. What to speak of television in every room. Let's get television on every wall. Let's get it on the ceiling. So when we lie down, we still watch it. Let's just maximize our worldly enjoyment. So she was thinking that now where all those difficulties are gone, now we may become apathetic, lethargic, and just materialistic, which is no good, because then we forget about Krishna. But when you remember Krishna, oh, it's amazing. It's so wonderful. So therefore she prayed to Krishna, let those difficulties come again and again. Because then we'll see you again. And when we see you, oh, life is just so good. And then no more birth and death. Yes, so very detached. Very detached. Maharaj Bharat, when he left home, he was on the level of Bhava. When he left home, he left everything. It is said that he left everything, his kingdom, his wealth, his power, his just his everything. As a person leaves stool after passing it. Now, you all know what that means. No one in their right mind hangs around under those circumstances. Everyone just gets out. Yeah. So that was what happened to him. That was how he felt. That what is all this money and huge palaces everywhere and people just serving me hand and foot. What is this? What is this? Better to serve Krishna rather than be concerned about how's my bank balance and, you know, can I afford the new model motor car when it comes out? Or maybe in those days, the new model chariot when it comes out. He was seeing all these things as a hindrance to his Krishna consciousness. And he always knew that really what I need to do is just keep developing my Krishna consciousness and helping others to do so. That's all I need. And I don't need these other things. I just don't need them at all. They're not helping me. Rather, they're holding me back from that which really makes my life worthwhile. That is the sense of his detachment. That devotional service to Krishna is really worthwhile because it's simply anandam buddhi bharatanam, just an ocean of bliss. It's just an ocean. And all these other things, wealth, etc. Oh, you know, you can use those things. You can use them in Krishna's service, actually. So there can be some use to them, but they tend to distract you from devotional service, which is that thing which gives your life meaning. So in that sense, detached. Not just some sort of, you know, very austere person, just self-denial. But it's all based on a higher principle of a higher taste. That being Krishna conscious is so much better than having all the money and the best job and the best motor car, etc., etc. Krishna consciousness is so much better. So in that sense, not interested in worldly things. And then, of course, what to speak of the fact, anasaktasya vishayan yatarham upayunjata, Nirbanda Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagyam Uchite. That one who sees everything related with Krishna and doesn't see anything as just being available for my enjoyment. What did they say? The world is my, what is it? Oyster? Anyway, fortunately we don't eat oysters. Don't think it's a vegetable. The closest you can get to it will be, what they call it? Sushi. Seaweed. Right. Don't get any closer to oysters. But the world is my oyster. The world is there for me to enjoy. And as much as I can get my hands on, good for me. But Radha Singh, this all belongs to Krishna. Therefore in that verse, the devotee is saying that, well, it's Rupa Goswami is saying, that the devotee becomes rightly situated above possessiveness. Everything belongs to Krishna, nothing belongs to me. Seeing it doesn't belong to me, then how can I lay claim to it? It's fictitious. You can just imagine some thief comes to your house and steals your television and he's running down the street and you call the police. Maybe you should just let him run down the street and take your television, actually, because television is a great killer. Well, it's literally a great killer, actually. But it's a great killer of good consciousness. So anyway, but the police come and catch him and give us the television. And he says, what? How dare you? You can't take my television. He just stole it from you. But he's become attached to something which is not his. And it's just so obvious that he has no right to say that, you know, how dare you try and take my television away. So actually it is like that. It is a fact. It is actually like that. It's not just some sort of pious idea that everything belongs to God and, you know, trying to be nice and good-natured like that. But actually it's a fact. Actually everything belongs to Krishna, including us. And everything should be used in Krishna's service, including us. So the devotee is very detached. Devotee doesn't long for any material respect in return for his activities. This is really a wonderful characteristic and very interesting characteristic of the devotees. You know, in material life, somebody achieves something, does something, comes first in something or whatever it may be. And then that means a lot to them. At least it means a lot in the sense that they think they're pretty cool. And they think that other people should think that they're pretty cool. Yeah. This is material life. And, you know, if somehow or other, if it's some competition, if some mistake is made, they actually won, but now somehow some mistake is made and it isn't recorded properly or something, and so now they're reading out the scores and he came first, but his name is not mentioned. At least materialistic people often they get very upset. You know, we read that, I don't know if it's every year, but it may be, in Matric, in Natal, KwaZulu Natal, some young person who wanted to come first only came 10th or something out of the whole province, and he commits suicide, isn't it? That's KZN for you. But I know, I've heard about it on a number of occasions. These really super intelligent young people, and they want to become first, but he somehow doesn't become first. And he either has a breakdown, or sometimes they even commit suicide. Isn't it? I heard about that. So this is really desiring honor and respect and prestige. But a devotee, even say a devotee does something very nice, very successful, some achievement perhaps, in Krishna consciousness, and the other devotees hear and then glorify that successful devotee. But the devotee immediately says, no, 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 no. It wasn't me. It was my team, or it was Krishna's mercy, or it was something like that. Yeah. So, this is the humility of the devotee. And it's because the devotee actually feels that it's not me. I mean, who am I? What can I do? Number five, a devotee is always confident, certain, Krishna will bestow his mercy upon me. A devotee is a person who does not think that life is just going on. And you got to take the rough with the smooth, and the ups with the downs, and the whatever other sayings they may have. You just got to sort of somehow carry on. But, you know, material life is such a thing that the way it is constructed, everyone is doomed to failure. Everyone is doomed to total failure. Please forgive me if any of you are sort of, you know, more materially ambitious and thinking, you know, you're going to really make a success of your life. But everybody's life is doomed to failure. Because everyone's going to die. And whatever you've achieved is all going to be lost. And actually you'll be born in your next lifetime, and even if you're some super wealthy person, some Bill Gates or, you know, whoever, Mr. Zuma, I'm sure he's working on it. You know, these guys, it's their main program. You should see in Russia, it's amazing. Any town you go to, well, they have a system in Russia of every town has a mayor. But the mayor is not just some sort of, ceremonial figure. Because a lot of the mayors in South Africa, they get paid nothing. Or if anything, it's just to sort of cover their costs for what they do. But in Russia, the mayor of a city is like the president of the country, of the city. He's in charge. So almost any town you go to in Russia, you ask, who's the richest person in town? And all the devotees will say, it's the mayor. Because, anyway, you figure that one out. So, when these people, everyone is doomed to total failure, to lose everything, because that's what the time of death is all about. And of course, you may not know yet, because most of you are young or youngish. But as you get old, it becomes more clear that actually your life is essentially a failure. As you get older, at least if you have a little intelligence, because even if you've accumulated a lot, but as you get old, you can't really do anything with it, because the body's just it's just lost too much vitality. Yeah. So the devotees, though, they're not materially ambitious. And even when there's difficulty, they know, Krishna will protect me. Krishna will help me. And whatever happens, by Krishna's mercy, it's for my good. Always eager to serve the Lord faithfully, very attached to chanting the holy names. Always eager to describe the wonderful qualities and characteristics and the pastimes, etc., of Krishna. And then very pleased to live in a place where the Lord's pastimes are performed, like Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwarka, ISKCON, Lanesha, ISKCON, Bloemfontein. Yeah. Like that. So now, these nine, are given as, you could say, the classic symptoms of that highly advanced level of Krishna consciousness, which is otherwise identified by the presence of these amazing emotional symptoms of ecstasy. But here, in this definitive introduction into the subject of what is this whole stage of bhava, of ecstatic love, what is it and what is it about? Here we see these nine things presented. But the thing is that these symptoms, these characteristics, you know, emotional symptoms can in many cases be imitated. Crying. You know, anyone can cry. Sometimes you see little children, you see it very vividly with children, that they can't get something, they cry. Then they get it, and within like 2 seconds flat, they're smiling and laughing. It means they were not really crying. But, you know, sometimes someone thinks, child is crying, oh my gosh, we've got to do something. But it's just an act. So it's not so hard to put on an act of some sort. Crying, fainting on the ground. It's not so bad. And indeed, this is what happens sometimes, at least, or even quite often in some circles in India, that people, they bluff by imitating these symptoms, acting as if they're in that some sort of very ecstatic condition. Whereas actually they're not. But they're doing that just to impress people, and maybe people perhaps become their followers and different motivations of that sort. But the thing is, these nine here, you cannot imitate so easily. You cannot. Maybe a little bit, but not for a long time. You know, what do you think? Cut down your sleeping 3 hours a night. Maybe one night. And you can sort of muddle through the day despite the fact you're a bit dizzy. But then the second night, if you do it, after 1 week, 2-3 hours of sleep, I mean, you may actually start losing your sanity, actually. Yeah, the mind just becomes kind of thrown out too much. So, you know, back in the good old days of ISKCON, the good old days, when we were there in London, sometimes you get some devotee would decide, right, I'm not this body, got it. Got it, I'm not this body. Therefore, seeing I'm not this body, I'm not going to I'm not going to worry about the body. I'm going to overlook, detach myself. So we get these cases every now and then. And we had some super special cases. We had this one boy, he would try and sleep like 2 hours a night. And during the japa time, he would have to walk and sometimes sort of jog, because otherwise he'd fall asleep literally while standing up. And that tends to hurt a bit. But we would go out every day, pretty much, to distribute books in different parts of London, big city. And we would take the underground railway and we'd go out, you know, to one suburb. Some would go to another suburb because there's all these quite substantial suburbs around London. And we'd distribute books in these different places and then come back on the underground railway. So this boy, what he would do, he'd get on the underground railway as soon as he would sit down. Really, as soon as he actually touched the seat, he would be gone. He would be asleep, completely out for the count. Just as they say in Chatsworth, one way. And he'd, you know, he'd be meant to get off at a certain stop. It's in one of the suburbs to distribute books, but he just sleep through it until they got to the end of the line, and then they'd come and wake him up. Come on, the train's finished, you've got to get off the train. So he'd get off and just cross the platform, there's a train going back the other way. And he'd sit down there and just fall asleep again and wake up at the other end of the line. It's a hard life. So it's not easy to imitate these things, like being so tolerant, like Maharaj Parikshit, being so tolerant like that, even in the face of your own death, just a matter of days away, so reserved and perseverant. So these symptoms cannot really be imitated, at least not for long. Therefore, they're very important symptoms, which are naturally displayed by a very advanced devotee as symptoms of his or her advancement as such. So anyway, for ourselves, we're not on those levels. But still, we must cultivate Krishna consciousness. Sadhana bhakti means that cultivation, ongoing practice, working on it, how to get it right, get it, do it better. So let us persevere with that. Let us carry on. And if some difficulty comes, but otherwise we're trying our best to serve Krishna, then try to take it that it's Krishna's arrangement. You know, you are in the line at the Sunday feast. You are in the line. And you look down the line and you see your favorite preparation is there. Sweet corn and paneer samosas. Butter paneer. What to speak of? Alu bini. Beans curry. And you see, there's not many samosas left. Oh no. And then you get, now you're moving up the line and you're just about there. And you're the next one, but the person in front of you gets the last samosa. And then you think, Krishna, come on, Krishna. How can you do that, Krishna? How dare you do that? So let us work on these things. You have to try. In Krishna consciousness, you have to try. And if you really try sincerely, then Krishna will make up for your shortcomings. And if you really try sincerely, Srila Prabhupada said, to spread Lord Chaitanya's movement, then when that final time of death comes, and maybe you're struggling to remember Krishna and not be too much affected by time of death, which is a big thing. But Prabhupada said, even if you cannot really remember Krishna at the time of death, because it's just too dramatic, but if you've served Lord Chaitanya, served his Sankirtan mission for your life, Lord Chaitanya will come at that time and force his way into your mind. And then back home, back to Godhead. So if we keep practicing and pushing on sincerely like that in a humble way, then one morning we will wake up, we will be in Goloka Vrindavan. Sri Goloka Vrindavan Dham Ki. And we will have another ISKCON in Goloka Vrindavan. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Okay, so next, I think we'll have some, we'll just have Arati. Is it Arati or just Kirtan? Just
Kirtan.
Kirtan. Okay. Shall we stand up for Kirtan?